When it's not just an elbow, but a friendly elbow. That's So MLS. The North American Soccer Podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Hello.
Welcome back, Nick. There is soccer being played.
There is actual soccer being played. There's stuff to watch.
Occasionally the snow is off the ground. All of a sudden, sometimes it makes a return here in sunny St. John.
Is there snow on the ground there still?
No, it's just ice. Oh, no, actually, no, it snowed today.
Okay.
But the best...
Is that the first time you've looked out your window today?
Well, maybe. No. I'm just trying to... All I have stuck in my head is that you have to switch sides of the street to park on. It's been, for the last week, it's been not so cold before today that it snowed. But, like... So cold that the ice that built up under the old car, like under the cars on one side of the street before they switched, is still there. So
that's beautiful.
Really lovely.
Well, that is something our cities have in common, because there is snow on the ground here too.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? It has snowed, I think, 3 mornings this week. Doing that little February thing that it does where it just decides to... drop a little bit of snow.
Aren't you? I guess when you look at it, you think it this looks so nice. We better do a fall winter season.
Yeah, exactly. I don't mind. It's not so bad. But yeah, as you said, there's actual sports to watch again, and you know, preseason games and matches aren't everybody's bag, and they're not always the most exhilarating matches. But what have you noticed kind of from the matches that you've seen or the things, the highlights, et cetera?
Well, what I kind of like is from when I first started like following pro soccer, I like when preseason friendlies give you an opportunity to see teams you don't see that often. Yeah. And last season with some of the like youth teams, that wasn't as big for the Vancouver Whitecaps in terms of like a draw, in terms of an interesting thing, but... watching the Whitecaps play Hokkaido Consadole Sapporo was in the final of the Pacific Rim Cup was interesting, even though not ultimately a success. It's the preseason. These things happen. But seeing the Whitecaps play against J1 League teams was interesting. Seeing them play against who, despite the unnecessary roughness, may be my new favorite USL team. Just because of how extra it is in the Las Vegas Lights.
Do you mean the jerseys or the coach?
All of it. All of it. The whole thing. Okay, so...
I agree.
If you did not watch Saturday evening's friendly at the Cashman Center in Las Vegas, Vancouver won 3-2. In a game that included 2 penalty kicks and sending offs to no fewer than, I believe you said, 3 coaches?
Yes, that's correct. 1 player and 3 coaches. Standard issue sending offs. Yeah, I mean, El Chalice, that's the coach's name of the Las Vegas Lights.
Yes.
Is, I think, my new favorite North American soccer coach, who upon ejection for a little bit of shoving on the sidelines... goes into the supporters section and immediately lights up a cigarette. I sort of got that Maradona vibe off of him of just like, I am going to do whatever the fuck I want to do. It was great. And he was still like yelling furiously from the supporters section.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of a funny thing too. I mean, you know that these things happen in preseason where teams are being competitive and playing hard because everybody's trying to show off and get their starting spot. So I get tensions are high, even though you might feel like, well, it's just preseason, so it doesn't really matter. To every player on the pitch, it does matter because you're trying to get that highlight reel goal. You're trying to show off your work ethic. You're trying to show your attitude that you care. And I kind of saw, I think Kai Kamara might have been the escalator of the on-field antics, but I think more or less his qualm was a bad tackle on Davies, and obviously you don't want to see any player on any team injured in a preseason match.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of escalated from there.
The Lights player, I believe, was windmilling backwards as though he was trying to head the ball or something, and I guess caught Davies with his elbow. Is that the case?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it looked like a foul, but it certainly didn't look like there was that much in it. To be honest, I was sort of surprised that it was a straight red card, but again, it's a preseason match, so what does it really matter? But I agree that Las Vegas Lights certainly look like an exciting franchise, a little bit discombobulated, but a fun team to watch, and you know, they were still good for two goals on the night.
Yeah, it was better. It was a better showing for them than the previous game against Montreal, which I believe they lost 4-0 or 2-0. In any case, they didn't score in the previous week. It was interesting to see Alphonso Davies scored a phenomenal. It was 2-0. Davies scored a phenomenal goal. That was the second for Vancouver on the evening. Where he, I think, came forward, like he on in the Vancouver box, headed the ball forward, yeah. And then ran onto his own ball. Completely, they were playing three at the back. It completely left his side defender in the dust, so the central defender was just like 1,000 kilometers away.
Yeah,
and ran. With pace right at the goal and just sort of slid it past the goalkeeper's left side. And it was a wonderful goal that showed off his trademark pace, but I was really excited to see a great finish on the end of it as well.
Yeah, I agree. It was a fantastic run. Forget the goal. I mean, the fact that he scored is sort of icing on the cake, but just to show off that kind of pace. And really, you see, he's grown a lot in the offseason. His athleticism, he's got a lot of bulk up top now, where I think in previous seasons we've seen him get muscled off the ball pretty easily, and he was powering into people.
Were you talking about his hair?
Yes, he's added some bulk there as well. It's great to see him score. I will say that the goalkeeper just chose the wrong direction, and I think he thought Davies would try to go around him, and so he literally dove out of Alphonso Davies' way. So I think it should have been a goal. It should have been a finish. It would be pretty disappointing if it hadn't. But as the commentators, who I actually thought were really good for this preseason match,
yeah,
said later, what you began to see, though, is that Davies still often makes the wrong decision. And we started to see that after he scored his goal, you know, he's still trying to play like a striker and win every ball and score it himself. And I thought the Whitecaps had two or three chances where Davies had the ball, tried to do too much with it, tried to take the shot himself when you've got a number of players open. And that's where you still see a little bit of naivety on his part. And I think that to me is not worrisome because he's a young player, but I would imagine Robbo is going to be getting in his ear to look up a little bit and get his teammates into the game and not try to do everything himself. Because I think that's ultimately why he didn't score in MLS last season, is that he tries to do too much. He's not a striker. He's a winger. He should be looking to get the ball into the box. He should be looking for Kamara. He should be looking for Juarez. Like, he shouldn't be always trying to take it on himself. Have a crack at goal when it's on, for sure. But there was a few times where it really wasn't there for him, and he still took it and predictably missed, or it was an easy save.
Mm-hmm. David Edgar made his first appearance back after injury. He was not in any of the Hawaii preseason game rosters, which worried me a little bit. Because I would like to see him back. I mean, I understand that nothing is set in stone, but it would be really nice to see him get his chance. And he did with the other half of the squad in LA today to play LAFC. The things that I liked out of the Lights were it was nice to see Marcus Davison back. Or I'm Daigo Kobayashi.
Yeah.
In the center of their field, and then they've got a great thing down there. Cashman Field looks like it's a great place to see the game. They've got supporters that have They've taken the greatest advantage of their crazy color scheme.
And I loved the supporter section as well. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, it's a preseason match. Of course, they're a new franchise, so there's some excitement around the club. But, you know, they have a proper ultras section with flares and drumming and singing, and that's really good. That's really positive to see in a preseason match.
They've got a sponsorship with the Plaza Hotel. So one whole end of the pitch is just a 15-foot ad for the Plaza Hotel. And they had a press conference where they announced this sponsorship. And a part of the sponsorship is that when the lights win, the Plaza Hotel will give each player $100 in chips to be used at the Plaza Hotel and Casino. And the players that unveiled this partnership were showing off the club's new shorts, but not the club's new kit. They had a full press conference in the lobby of the Plaza Hotel where the players were just standing there, ripped and shirtless with Vegas showgirls. And I was like, oh, you guys.
Yeah. In US, in USL, things are possible that are not possible in MLS. Shirtless short unveilings in hotels.
Can you remember?
I love it. I love it.
Can you remember that, like, for the longest time, the explanation for no sports teams in Vegas is because they were so worried about sports betting through certain scandals involving baseball, I think. And now it's like literally the casino is just giving players chips.
Yeah. I think they seem to have gotten over it, I would say. Around the league, there's not too many stories from preseason. Of course, it is preseason, so you don't want to read too much into things. A lot of teams early on have been playing divisions below them or under 21 sides, just trying to get some wins and get their team gelling and feeling what it's like to get that win and finish it. So I'm kind of looking through at MLS teams playing other MLS teams. And the results have kind of been all over the map. There hasn't been too many huge blowouts or anything that we can really, I think, read too much into. I think one thing that we predicted at the end of last... Well, not predicted. It was sort of bound to happen at the end of last season is Orlando's rebuilding and restructuring. Uh-huh. And obviously, now they got that sweet, sweet Laren money and have put it to good use. They've looked really good. You know, the 4-1 result over Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
They've had a number of other wins, I believe, as well. And they beat Philadelphia as well earlier in the week.
Uh-huh.
Real Salt Lake they beat on Saturday, yesterday, 4-2. And of course, you know, that doesn't mean those results are going to translate to the league. But this is a team that I think has rebuilt themselves top to bottom and is well primed to be an early contender for the playoffs. I think they're going to be a team that's other teams really struggle to dig into much. And I think they've addressed a lot of the key issues they had last season. So Orlando is kind of my one to watch going into the season that I think is going to start strong. I think they probably still need to add a little bit of depth, but, with the additions they've made, I think they're going to be a really, really difficult team to beat.
That is going to be a really interesting look. Indeed, the Laren money has the Besiktas money has come to Orlando.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I did look up the other day. They did not make a legitimate come to Besiktas video for Laren. But there is on Twitter a highlights package with the song from the Come to Besiktas videos. So at the very least, they did make the song because like come to it's now like they're not doing the videos anymore, but it is like still a part of their branding.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's sort of the same
with the terrible Bayern Munich US Twitter account. Saying that they're going to hashtag come to Besiktas.
Oh, and I did finally get a number for the what exactly the money was, because there was some, as usual with MLS, it was like, we got some money, let's not talk about it anymore. So it was just over $2 million, I believe.
How much money?
A little higher than I think we had guessed, but...
Yes. Well, the thing is that as you have players depart, they made some really key acquisitions to bring people in.
Yeah.
I really do think that Don Dwyer is going to be a good move for them. One of those players yeah. that's moved around a lot and hopefully finds a little bit more of a home. It was kind of another player that's like that I was laughing about earlier today while I was looking at the results of the Montreal-Chicago thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dax McCarty was on the score sheet, and I'm like, did they trade Dax again? But no.
Wait.
No, I was just reading it wrong. I thought I saw Montreal McCarty, and I was like, "What? No."
Well, and I would have said that would be a great move for Montreal. I think Dax McCarty would fit in well there. But he also, as we know, does a great job in Chicago.
Yes.
Talk about players who move around a lot but are still consistently good. You said you had some news about TAM, though. Since we're talking about money.
Well, so the it's not like news. Gregory Vanderweel was signed to TFC using some TAM. So that should be an interesting ad for them. They've been playing some Mexican team. They've been playing some Mexican teams and not doing too bad.
Yeah. He's the Dutch defender that they brought in?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Who was playing in, who was just previously playing in Turkey and Italy. But where he didn't have the best time, but hopefully he can regenerate himself. The funny thing that I saw here, the evolution of TAM. We've talked a lot about how TAM is changing the way exchanges are made because teams are more likely to want to trade TAM than players.
Mm-hmm.
Well, DC United on Monday, or no, I think on Tuesday, got Yamil Assad from Atlanta for not just GAM and TAM for 2018, but future TAM.
Oh.
So they will receive $200,000 in GAM and $100,000 in TAM in 2018, and $100,000 in GAM and $100,000 in TAM from DC's 2019 allocation. And if Assad appears in at least one MLS match in 2020, they will shovel out another $100,000 in GAM.
Wow. That's a great signing for them. Actually, you know, DC United, and not just because they signed our bold buddy David Osted, I think have set themselves up quite well as well. You know, the addition of somebody like Darren Maddox, you might not think, oh, wow, you guys have really rebuilt your attacking prowess there. But, you know, they've made some key moves, and they're starting to look like a stronger team. And, you know, hopefully also when they get into their new stadium, that will help kind of boost them. Because they've struggled recently. But yeah, they're another club that I think is going to surprise people a little bit this season.
I think that one thing that's interesting one thing that's interesting about MLS is that it creates these sort of like career MLS players that kind of
yeah.
knock about a little bit. And sometimes once they've moved a few places, you can overlook them somewhat. However, the joy and the task in putting together a successful rebuild, I think, comes from being able to find pieces like a Darren Maddox that are underappreciated and try to make the most of them.
Absolutely. And I think a number of clubs have done that. It's always easy to talk about the young, exciting new talent coming in or the European players, but you said there are these sort of overlooked evergreen MLS players that are in their 30s. Often they have higher salaries, but, you know, are going to be got on a free transfer and maybe just need to slot into the right system. And I think there's a number of teams that have done that really well. I think DC United has been pretty quiet on the big on the transfer market and in the draft and things like that, but have been really quietly building a very solid, dependable team. and looking for some consistency. And I know that consistency and Darren Maddox don't necessarily go together, but the other additions they've made, bringing in a player like Assad for future space dollars, is a brilliant move on their part. I mean, we saw what he did with Atlanta. There's a ton of talent there, and he's a player that will be able to stick around for a while, hopefully, and have a real future there. Investing in, again, another relatively high-salary goalkeeper like David Oestead, we know he can come up with incredibly key saves that can literally win you games. That's key for DC United this year, and to not be as important as scoring goals is, it's not to lose so many games badly and games that just sort of fall out of their reach or they just fall sort of short of the mark.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing with the Whitecaps, I think that I was a little underwhelmed at first because of this career MLS-ness with the signing of Kay Kamara. But I've been nothing but impressed. That's the impression that I've gotten out of these first couple of preseason games.
Yeah.
Obviously a leader on the pitch, obviously super talented, and I'm really excited to see what comes from him this year.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think that's one of the things that you can take away from preseason matches is work ethic. I mean, of course, everybody's competing for places right now, but Kai Kamara has come in and really not reinvented himself, but reinvigorated himself. And as much as people before were sort of talking about, oh, this would have been a great transfer 2 years ago, but now he's older, what can he really do? And people are forgetting, he's one of the most consistent goal scorers in MLS, if you look over his career. This guy is a striker from top to bottom. He's what the Whitecaps have been desperately missing, and now we're finally seeing that. When we're seeing those balls get whipped into the box, he's had some great link-up play with Teixeira, for example. And he looks like he wants it. He's working his ass off at both ends of the pitch, which is really what you want to see from your big signing. He's working hard, and you know he's vocal, but in the right ways, right? He really seems to be embracing this sort of leadership role and mentoring younger players, but also doing what he does best.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They're a team that I'm interested to see. I'm also interested to see how LAFC starts looking now that they're playing games. The chance to have a look at them is going to be interesting. We've seen the types of moves they've been making and the experienced people they've been bringing in on defense to see how that gels and to see how LA coalesces around them is going to be interesting. I don't know if the word is that I'm a little worried about the Galaxy, but I feel like the transition to adding a second team in the city. I remember at the time that it was happening in New York, I was defensive of New York Red Bull, even a few years earlier, I was dismissive of them because of the sponsorship. All of a sudden, you know, these were the MLS originals, and NYC is the big bad Yankee and city funded interlopers. And New York were able to keep their niche, partially because they had Thierry Henry and they had Thierry Henry. I just did put
that helps.
I put the I in there before, but I just wanted to correct it just in case anybody thought I was talking about old Terry. That really helped, and they had great players at the time. But you always worry when you know, obviously whenever a team comes in, they want to make it look as exciting and as celebrity supported as possible. You know, the Galaxy have won enough. The Galaxy are the Galaxy, so maybe I shouldn't be too worried for them. But there is a suggestion that they will have that their season ticket numbers are down about 4,000.
Oh, wow!
The Galaxy podcast reported that they have about 7,500. Which, if you match that up with the SI report from last year, that they had 11,400 last season.
Wow!
That's a bit of a dip.
It is. I wonder if that's, I'm sure it is a bit of a hangover from their terrible season last year. And those numbers, I assume, would likely increase if they can get some good results together. But speaking of you know, teams that have been kind of quiet, LA Galaxy has really not made any particularly interesting moves to their team that would suggest they're going to do much better this season.
No.
And in preseason form have looked pretty poor. You know, Kamara has come in and is scoring goals from Columbus, which is great to see that his form is going to continue in LA. But their back line has been just way off the mark. They lost 4-2 to Columbus the other day. A good performance from Columbus, but most of the goals were mistakes that they capitalized on. And LA just doesn't seem to really have a clue. And I don't know how much having LAFC come into the league affects that or really matters. But right now, LA Galaxy has done nothing to suggest that they're not going to finish rock bottom again this year.
Which is really tough because you don't... Not only do they don't have immediate prospects, but I also don't look at this roster and feel like, you know, you can, if you're Siggy Schmidt, you can make an argument, oh, it's going to pay off a couple years down the line.
Yeah, that's the thing. They don't seem to be building for this season or for the future. Like, it's just... They seem to really be banking on Kamara and the Dos Santos brothers bringing something to the table, which I think they will. They're going to score goals, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I'm just looking at LAFC's roster now that it's fleshed out. And here's the additions they've made to their back line. Of course, everybody's new because they're a new team. Steven Betashore, Laurent Simon, Benny Failhaber, who knows not a defender, but he's good defensive mid, Jordan Harvey, Dejan Jakovic. Like, they have... what was the other one? Walker Zimmerman. Like,
that's a seasoned backline.
It's a seasoned backline, with also some youth and some room to grow. But you really sort of feel like LA Galaxy, rather, has kind of hit their ceiling. And, yeah, it's hard to imagine this season going much differently for them at this point, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, you always want to see teams... be healthy, and it's not easy. It's not an easy process. I'm a little worried about their idea of hanging their hats on Ola Kamara, not because I'm not confident in that he'll be able to do some good stuff, but because I felt that when things got tough last year,
I feel like
the coach was too quick to publicly put the blame on the striker. You know, Kamara is great, but I wouldn't say that he's the kind of player where you can put the whole world on his shoulders. And then if that doesn't, you know, come together, then you say, oh, well, he didn't deliver.
Yeah, I mean, I think for some players, and I think this will be true of Ole Kamara, a change is as good as a rest. Maybe a shift in focus. Again, he's been scoring goals in preseason. He's been doing very well. He seems to fit well within the Galaxy system, but, you know, and maybe I'll end up eating my words, but he's also, you know, a 10-12 goal a season striker. I don't think he's going to come in and score 20 goals this season for LA Galaxy, which is what they're going to need if they can't sort out their back line.
Oh, I realize what the mistake that I was making. I was thinking last year about the way that Galaxy treated Gyasi Zardes.
Yes.
Who they traded for Kamara. I definitely agree about Kamara. I hope that they treat him a little bit better than they did his predecessor.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see Zardes as well with his new club in form and just having moved on from that. Because I agree, I thought they kind of threw him under the bus. And, you know, Siggy Schmidt's a great coach. He's obviously has MLS experience out the wazoo. I was kind of surprised that I didn't see much of a shakeup in the offseason. I sort of thought they might have dumped Cole to get some of that salary money back and rebuild the back line, get sort of focus on the spine of the team, and they've kind of done the exact opposite. They've just been focusing on their forwards, and I think, you know, what we're seeing in preseason is playing out exactly as you might expect it would.
Yeah. Because of the specific like areas of my interest in MLS, mm-hmm. I'm willing to be the not knowing the history jerk who looks at it and says, well, Siggy, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
Because I think that after a certain amount of time, there is a little bit of pressure to come up with results, especially because as you put it, he didn't blow the team up. And at the moment where they really seemed to stop trying when the captain – or not stop trying, but when the captain left halfway through the season, and, like, it seemed pretty clear that that was going to be – that's the end of their relevancy as a contender that season.
Yeah, I mean, anything. It was only ever going to go one of two ways, but I think you called it right after he left is what you would expect is they just nosedived. Everybody seemed to give up. I'm surprised to see so many players left on that squad that really just gave up last season. And I'm not sure what the coach is doing to reinvigorate and support them going into this season. That, again, as you said, when things get tough, who's going to show up and who's going to perform? And it, from the looks of it, it's going to be a real tough start to the season for them.
Yeah.
But speaking of coaching decisions, we decided that a way to sort of talk about our predictions for the season and kind of look at the whole league without literally going team by team is the fact that you have to build your fantasy team.
Yeah, you have been very quick on the hop to build your fantasy team. I haven't quite got there yet, so I've got to make sure that I have my stuff together to pull together the results.
And we were in a three-person fantasy league last year. I think I did finish just above you, but your friend cleaned us out just about every single week, and I think had something like 400 points more than both of us by the end.
That's so Olivier, I think.
For redemption this season. So how do you want to build your squad? Are you going to go back to front or?
Well, I've just started. I think I am going to start with a goalkeeper first, just because that's the screen they give you to begin with. My team name is AC Key Business Indicators.
Love it.
Because those are what there's a hundred million of them in this game.
Yeah.
And you've got to get them.
They're what matters most.
Yes. I am going to. So they have. So basically, the way that it works, they've got 15 players open. You have $100 million salary cap to try and put things together. I think that having a goalkeeper is important because they always have. I think there's some good rewards for shutouts, but I just because of my sentimentality and the fact that his move will get him a little, has knocked $1 million off of his price, I think I am going to pick David Ostead.
Okay,
as my keeper.
I think for both of us that is a somewhat obvious choice that we would move with him to DC United. I might be watching a few more DC United games this season than I have in past years.
They have this.
I have him on my bench. I picked him as my backup goalkeeper. I feel like I'll probably be playing him number one more often. The only reason I did that is their opener is against Orlando, and I don't want to set up my friend for failure.
For failure. Yes. I think that there was this weird moment on Valentine's Day where the Vancouver Whitecaps were putting out Valentine's Day meme cards, which, I mean, like, the classic one, I don't think that there's anything that you need to do beyond Happy Carl Valentine's Day. I think that's it. You don't have to complex than that. And the ones that they kept going with were like Stefan Marinovic, you're the keeper of my heart, and then another one for Efraim Juarez, and I just felt like, no, I'm not ready yet. I'm not over it.
I know.
Marinovic was a strange choice for that.
I know. I'm a huge fan of Marinovic, as you know, and he's looked good as well in the preseason. But I agree, it's still sort of like, you're sort of looking. It's like, is Ousted on the bench? Is he around? This breakup hurts a little bit. I picked Zach Steffen as my starting goalkeeper. I liked what he did last season with Columbus. I also think if you're into the fantasy thing, he's good for points as well because he is great at saving penalties.
So my strategy last year was to have... I do try to diversify my picks. But I did pretty much... go heavy on the Portland Strikers. Mm-hmm. Do you think that strategy will be as successful again this year?
No. No, I think it's fine. I mean, of course coaches have to struggle with this too. The trouble is that, you know, if you're just thinking about building an MLS team from scratch and you could have any player, you know, 7 or 8 names come to mind right away. And then as you look through the list, you're like, oh, they're really awesome too. Oh, yeah. And then you quickly realize that you have just spent half of your budget on 3 players and you need to spill things around a little bit more. Who are you looking at to be your strikers?
I'm giving it a look right now. One thing that's really confusing to me is that they haven't updated the jerseys yet.
Yeah.
So everybody has the wrong color jersey.
Yeah.
I did have Audi on my team last time. And he was a success. The money is quite high. Mm-hmm. I feel like you want to go in hard, and I feel like if I'm going to go in hard for something, I am going to go with Josie Altidore.
Yeah.
I know that from a Whitecaps perspective, this is all like, you know, a Toronto-Portland heavy team is sacrilege. But
after Josie made me eat my words last season about how I thought it was foolish he stayed on with that ankle injury and it was going to be Toronto's downfall, and he comes in to be the hero of the whole thing, I did pick him originally. I think he's a great pick. I think ultimately, as a fantasy team and in MLS, the best picks are consistency. Yes, you can make as many changes as you want each week. I think you still can anyway. But overall, you know, it's great to get players that are getting high points. Mm-hmm. But you also want players that are performing every week. And that Addy, for me, over a season is going to score a lot of goals and win you points, but is maybe not the most consistent week to week. And if you want to be picking new strikers every week, or then you fall into that trap where Addy's in a slump, you switch him out for somebody else, and then that week he scores a brace or he gets a hat trick, which happens to me frequently in all of my fantasy leagues.
with the benefit, just for the benefit of good audio, I'm not taking the most. I will pick my sub bench later, and the balance of money I actually have to spend, I might tweak a little bit later. But
sure,
I think that my second striker, the one that's going to be a slightly less expensive but still a value proposition, is Anthony Jackson-Amel from Montreal. I think
How much
that,
is he?
He had a great year last year. I think that he is only going to continue sort of building his reputation. He is still not necessarily with Piatti on the squad, he's not necessarily the focus.
Yeah.
But I think that at 6.5 million in the fantasy game, mm-hmm. he has a real value upside, and I think that he will be of value to the Impact and hopefully
Absolutely.
Also to me.
Yeah, and a guy who also gets points in real life as well. I went with Martinez from Atlanta up top. I think he's going to have another great year. Strong, powerful, quick forward. Again, kind of looking for that consistency overall. And I've also picked Dom Dwyer because I think that this is going to be his year. He looks hungry. They've got some support for him in the center of the park.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to see how he starts the season.
Despite the fact that we, looking at the midfield, despite the fact that we just addressed that a strategy line relying heavily on Portland's big guns may not be as successful this year, I am going to pick Diego Valeri.
It's kind of hard not to.
as one of my big signings for the midfield. Just because even when Portland had trouble getting things together in the playoffs, I think that it wasn't because they didn't have attacking ability, and I think that you know, Valeri still put in a great season last year.
He certainly did, and I mean, there's nothing to suggest that he won't do the same again this season. I hope he can keep his foot on the gas. I haven't seen much of Portland preseason, so I don't quite know how they've been doing. But we know Valeri is a guy who can show up every game and perform. There's not too many bad games that he has.
To mirror your selection in bidding on Orlando, I'm going to also pick Justin Merrim, who has also made the move. You know, it's a shame that Orlando picked a fight with Orlando and Besiktas are not at Onga terms, because I feel like they could really borrow the slogan with the amount of additions.
Yeah.
And
truly. I think they should just sort of steal it. That would be great.
Oh, yeah.
Orlando.
That's true. And if
I'd forgotten about Justin Merrim. Like, yeah, they've made some fantastic moves. I'm just looking at the whole team and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. Like they got Will Johnson as well. They still, I mean, I know he's not a move. He was there last season as well. But him, Kleston, Justin Merrim, like they have a really solid midfield now.
From the Whitecaps, I'm also going to select Christian Jatera, with the idea that I feel like with the departure of Freddie Montero and Christian Bolaños, a lot more is going to fall to him, is just the impression I've gotten so far from preseason games.
Yeah. And just a little side note as well, I'll say I think Mosquito might actually finally factor in a little bit more this season as some room has opened up in the center of the park. But both players have looked quite good as well in preseason.
Yeah, I think that that's a situation. We've always looked at Mosquito as somebody that we want more out of.
Yeah.
And I think that a little bit more time on the pitch will be helpful, because I feel like there's something to contribute. What else do I have?
Who's your midfield right now?
So my midfield right now is Valeri, Merrim, Teixeira, and I have one more to pick. And this is all without subs. I was a little down in the weeds. One player that I see on the list that the fantasy players' concern in terms of consistency is to select a player that's going to stick around. And when I see Jordi Reyna's name, he continues to be a question mark. He has appeared in preseason games so far. But he hasn't seemed like a huge part of the plans.
It's interesting, yeah. I don't want to read too much into it either, but it's not surprising that he's been virtually absent from all Whitecaps social media. Like the coach hasn't talked about him much. There's been very little questions about him, and like they're trying to sort of protect the player a little bit, and hopefully that this bad news thing that's attached to him just somehow people forget about. But I agree, it's been kind of interesting, and that he hasn't seemed to factor that much into even the preseason lineups. And I'm wondering if they're still shopping him around, but waiting for knowing who they're going to replace him with, or waiting for the right offer. But I agree. I wouldn't be surprised if Reyna is still not actually there 2 weeks from now. Or maybe he stays until the summer, but Yeah, I think you're right. I actually I saw him and Anthony Blondell in Whole Foods before they left.
That's awesome.
I did not say hello. I would have said hello to Blondell, but I decided with Reyna there, I was like, no.
I think that, you know, as important as it is for a team to be judicious about how they promote and celebrate a player when they've had a personal issue, and Reyna at this point is... I don't believe any specific accusations have been made, but he's just in a wrapped up in some bad shit that could reflect really poorly on him in his decision making. But I think that you also saw with a player like Shane and Williams last year that beyond just club decisions, having an issue like Williams had with domestic violence allegations, he was not the same player. The club was not as interested in dealing with him, and he has left DC United's preseason tryout. So he's a little more in the weeds. One player that isn't is the Dynamo goalkeeper Tyler Wellis has been re-signed despite the fact that he's still suspended as well for
interesting
for domestic violence allegations, which is troubling because it's kind of hard. It's weird because it's a suspension, but this is MLS, so they would have retained his rights. Like, I don't. You would think that if a player's contract runs out while suspended, you don't have to like pay him, you don't have to sign him to a new deal. There's so many discovery things that I find it hard to believe that you would lose his rights because you didn't re-sign him while he was unable to participate in the league.
Yeah, that is bizarre. So Reyna remains a question mark. Who knows? Maybe we are reading too much into it. Maybe it's a bit of wishful thinking. I can't wait to see the tail end of the guy. He's a fantastic player, but I agree that things like this are weigh heavily, and maybe it should weigh heavily on him, but I don't think he's going to be the same player, and especially a player so young. It can be a really bad influence on your team and a real sort of motivational destroyer and just a distraction. And I wonder if just on a practical level, that's what the coaching staff is looking at, is that is this a player who's going to mentally be here this season? Even if he did nothing wrong and was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, is he going to perform? Not to downplay the seriousness of the situation that happened where a young woman lost her life. I agree. We could see a big dip, and he's an expensive player to have sitting on the bench.
I think that... you're absolutely right. The most important thing to mention in cases where in really terrible cases like the tragedy that unfolded that Reyna is wrapped up in or in domestic violence things, my thoughts are always first and foremost with the victims. And this isn't, I'm not thinking of this from like a basic like sports, like, is this going to help or hurt the team sort of feeling of distraction? Yes. It's like, how does this affect, what does this show about this person as a person? And how is this person affected by the fact that something has happened to them in full view of, you know, the soccer world?
I agree, and I think I'm glad that you mentioned that as well. Like, we're not trying to be just focused on athletes, but, you know, there's some practical elements that come into decision-making, and it's one of the reasons why I want to see him gone, is things like this are not what supporters of clubs want around their clubs. And, you know, I was disappointed that, you know, although Shane and Williams last year was cleared and was not charged, I was disappointed to see him back with the club. I thought he should have been suspended, and then they should have terminated the contract. Surely they have to have clauses in contracts where they can part ways with players who are embroiled in things off the pitch. It was kind of disappointing to see him kind of given a second chance.
With Williams, my understanding, and I'm just going on memory here, so I really hope that I'm not citing details incorrectly. My understanding was that the family worked something out together. So it's a little challenging at that point to take action as a club once it is being sort of handled internally to them. But it just had a result, you know, regardless. Yeah. You don't have to, as much as, you know, was it right to have the player back? It's like the player obviously was affected by it, regardless.
Well, and what's happening around the players to build up these situations that indicate something about their lifestyle and their way of thinking and moving through the world that is going to affect them on the pitch one way or another as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I do have one more open spot on midfield. And since we mentioned him earlier, and I made a pick of him last year, I generally enjoy his body of work, I will be picking Dax McCarty of Chicago for that spot. Chicago still has an embarrassment of riches. Hopefully they can continue to build on their it's hard to remember that they, because of the team they became in the end of the stretch, that was a mid-season turnaround. They were to my eyes as bad as they were the year before at the start of the campaign. So I think that I think that there are bright things ahead of them with an actual moment to reflect.
I agree. It's also considering that they sort of right at the end kind of faltered a little bit. You sort of forget also that they do have the golden boot winner on their team as well, which counts for something.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm taking a look here at defenders.
I went to
yes. What was your midfield?
I want to compare my mid. I want to go.
Yes.
So I took a few risks here, a couple of chances, just to, because there's a few players I'm not sure about.
Get spicy.
And why not, right? Have some fun with it. So I went with Almiron in the center of the park.
Nice.
I know he's good for points.
You could transfer
good for goals and good for assists.
You could transfer him out between weeks if he goes to Europe.
Yeah, exactly. And I went with Yo Lun. I think that's how you say his name. The new midfielder, the young guy for Orlando. Yo Lun.
Yep.
I'm excited to see what he offers. Could go either way. I went with my dear friend Michael Bradley just to spite myself. But obviously, if you're thinking consistency, it doesn't get much more consistent than Michael Bradley right now.
Oh yeah, and at 9 million, he's a great choice
from RSL. And Brooks Lennon for 5.5 million, I think is a fantastic young player. Maybe not consistent, but as a coach, I'm willing to give him his shot.
Now, we know that you're a big fan of the RSL manager. What do you think of the club's chances as we get closer and closer to the day the season starts?
Yeah, it's a good question. They're an interesting team because they're always good for scoring goals, but last season just couldn't quite put enough results together to do too much. Although, if I'm remembering correctly, down the stretch did have a little bit finally find their feet scoring goals again towards the later part of the season. I think, again, not an a number of major moves, but I really like the way that Petke has set the team up. They've got some fantastic... They've been able to sort of keep the core of their team that they've had success with and then make a few additions. So I think their chances are good. I don't know why I'm going to this level of detail, but I think they might start a little bit slow again and then find their feet sort of in the closer to the midway point of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But as a team, I think that they're pretty solid back to front end, and I think they've done the right thing is that they didn't throw out what was working for them.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they didn't have a ton of success last season. They've kept all the key pieces that worked, and they've made a few additions, which is obviously good coaching.
For defense, I'm not actually 100% sure what the metric is, so it's always interesting to pick defenders in a league like this, because the league is very very focused on attack. A fantasy system.
Yeah, I agree. I don't get how they mark defenders.
But I think that you can't go wrong. I think that you can't go wrong with a player like Defender of the Year, Aiko Parra, to start. All the defenders in the MLS mm-hmm. fantasy mm-hmm. system are pretty low on the price range. I also, just because of my personal enjoyment of him over the last TFC campaign, I'm going to pick Drew Moore. This is a fantasy league team where mm-hmm. Moore would definitely...
He's re-signed, right?
I believe so, yeah. Moore would definitely be on my real-life team, and I don't know if that's going to, like... I don't know if that necessarily translates to points, but I think that's definitely an interesting place to start. One move, and I'm looking for him, and I want to give a shout out to another of my players, my fantasy league players from last year. Jahlil Anibaba has moved from Houston to New England. So that is interesting.
I didn't know he'd moved. But yeah, he's I like him a lot.
That's an interesting look. I'm interested to see what comes out of New England this year. I don't think there's a lot. Yeah. Not a lot has really caught my eye. And as much as they were great, they were a squad that had promise last year. Maybe they can find that improvement with him. But it's interesting to see what Revs are going to show up this year.
Yeah, I agree. With Wynn still wanting away and looking likely to leave at some point, that to me is a bit troublesome, because how are they going to get a replacement for him before the start of the season?
Mm-hmm. I'm also going to go, I saw him here because we've showered not enough love in this direction, for the new LAFC defender, Lawrence Simon, is going to be my final pick on the defensive line.
Nice. That's a pretty solid back line, my friend.
That'll be the combination of Opara, Moore, Anibaba, and Simon. Who did you pick?
So this is probably not going to surprise anybody who knows me, but I'll give the most surprising or interesting pick first, which is Greg Garza from Atlanta. I thought he was tremendous last year, put in a really, really solid body of work over the season. So I've got him. Stacked up beside him, I've got Kendall Waston.
Yep.
For obvious reasons.
Yep.
And then I decided to call on a couple of my old pals and two of my Facebook friends, actually, just put that in there. Stephen Betisher and Jordan Harvey, teammates once again.
That's a good set. That's a good set. And now that I have a little bit of money on my hands, after picking my starting 11, I have 18 million. So you're right about picking a you're right about maybe Ousted as a backup goalkeeper. So I'm going to pick my good friend and MLS goalkeeper of the year, Tim Mealy.
Yes, of course. Your old buddy Timmy.
My old buddy Tim, who I met at the MLS Cup final. And also, you know, Sporting KC brought the shutouts last year, so I think that that's a good pick. So that more or less, I think, fills out the squad. Details are going to be revealed when we have them for perhaps a That's So MLS Fantasy League. If you want to see how you now that we've put all our cards on the table, come give us a look.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else that you're interested in? I want to say a word in support of the health of Jason Craigs, who was in a car accident, and he's okay. Which was something that popped up over the last couple of weeks. Glad to see he's all right. There's been a lot of jersey rollouts.
Yes.
Variously, the Whitecaps now have a gray and silver number.
Yeah.
That's I wasn't sure about it first because I wasn't sure if it was just kind of a more boring dark jersey, but people seem into it, and I think the silver works. The only other things that are weird are kind of the camo pattern on the new Sounders jerseys.
Oh, God. It's the most shockingly horrible jersey I've ever seen. It is so ugly.
I really enjoyed somebody photoshopped the Obama portrait into it, which I liked.
I feel like they let Clint Dempsey designed that. Like, it just screams Clint Dempsey's like, yeah, camo. Let's get some camo, guys.
Atlanta now has a complete light peach orange secondary color scheme.
And I kind of like it. Like, at first you're just like, well, that is loud. That is a loud jersey. But there's something about it that looks kind of sharp. I'm not going to lie. I sort of like the weird peachy orange.
It doesn't look... I feel like the Dynamo have a monopoly on the creamsicle look, but I don't think it's that... the orange is that deep. And I also like, you know, they call it the King Peach jersey, and I always like when a club takes something organic, like it's named after a TIFO. Course, the fact that Georgia is known for its peaches. And I always like when a club is willing to take something like a TIFO and recognize it. The whole FC Edmonton Rally Rabbit thing was one of the best things that club ever did. So, I'm just bumming myself out by thinking of FC Edmonton. Although maybe the CPL might have better news on that front at some point in the future. But
let's hope so. Can we talk about the other worst kit, which I hate so much? It's not even interesting bad, which is maybe why I hate it so much, but FC Dallas's new jersey.
Oh, yeah, that looks bad.
Oh, it's just like, who designed... It just looks so amateurish and just bad. And the thing I ultimately want with any jersey is, for me, the focus is the team crest.
Yes.
Like, the eye should be drawn to the crest. It shouldn't blend in. Mm-hmm. And this weird color block pattern... It looks like they're wearing a flag or something. I hate it. I hate it so much.
It looks a lot like the Texas flag, but it doesn't look good as a garment. And especially...
It looks literally like a flag. Not like, oh, it's the colors, and it's sort of reminiscent. It's like they made their shirts out of the Texas flag.
They pinned it around in the back. The way it looks like you... It looks like somebody has... Just before the game, somebody has stabbed you and you don't want to and ripped a hole in the bottom of the primary white kit. So you've cut the entire bottom of the primary white kit out and found your away strip and then sewed it onto that. It looks like two jerseys belted together.
That's a fantastic way of describing it. It literally looks like a Frankenstein of both of their kits combined. The worst elements, the most boring elements of both kits, just in one.
A lot of people are every time the Whitecaps put out a jersey, wish that it would be the hoop. And FC Dallas are made for their hoops. Do you think there's like an anti-hoop direction? Like, are teams being sort of like gently nudged to get rid of their hoops?
I don't know. I think I found a new contender for worst kit, though.
Well,
why don't
you go
click on San Jose's jersey unveiling and let me know what you think of this design.
Wow! I had not seen that.
It's a little bit literal, isn't it?
The sublimated design looks like a Liga MX selection or something that you'd see in the 90s. It's got sort of a jagged line design, like a very 90s, design with, you know, 60 degree angles.
I think it's meant to make you think about earthquakes, Andrew. The worst part, too, is, like, if you're like, okay, well, like, let's look at the details, and you go up close, and it's, like, a weird cloud pattern as well.
Let's talk about the relationship between the overall design and the sponsor logo. The sponsor logo is always going to be, like, something you have to work around. Like, I get that. But the fact that this Sutter Health font is so clean and the rest of the jersey is so weird.
Yeah, actually, I'd say the best part about this jersey is the Sutter Health logo. Sutter Health.
I'm ever so
thankful that as much as I hate Bell as a company, I'm really glad that they're the Whitecap sponsor because they just have a very simple, small, clean logo.
Although I kind of, like, you know, it makes me feel weird in a, you know, if you don't want to be too commercialized, that, like, how many beautiful moments and memories in my life have I wore a 15-inch Bell ad into?
I know.
It wasn't as big of a problem when I was a teenager wearing English Premier League kits because it's like, who knows what a mansion is? Yeah. So it's fine. I didn't care about wearing it, but it's a little different. A little different when it's such a omnipresent company.
Yeah, indeed. This massive conglomerate.
Well, do you have anything else you're interested in? Landon Donovan's going to come back and play a friendly with Leon in San Jose.
I saw that too. I think we're on the same MLSsoccer.com page and we're seeing the same suggested reads. No, you know what? I don't have too much to say. I think we'll talk about some of the other teams that maybe we didn't talk about today as preseason wraps up and as we start getting into the actual season. Teams that, you know, I think a lot of teams still have some question marks over them and maybe they've been a bit quiet, but of course, as we know, none of that matters until they're actually on the pitch, so I don't want to say too much about them.
We're so close.
It's crazy. It's 2 weeks away. Mm-hmm. Isn't that insane?
Mm-hmm. I'm ready. I am ready. Even though I have taken the opportunity to watch a little more European football in the break than I even do most years, even if it was a commentary-less stream in an empty Hawaiian stadium, just to be seated in front of the TV again and watching some good North American soccer made me excited. So I'm very excited for the games to return in earnest.
Yeah, as am I, and I mean, it's a weird feeling as a sports fan, and I never thought I'd be this person, but you kind of, it's like summer break, and then you come back to school and see all your friends again. You're like, Kendall Waston, Christian Teixeira, there they are. Like, it's nice to see them again, and I'm excited to I just want things to get going. I'm ready.
In the meantime, where can we find you online?
You can find me online tweeting at That's So MLS. And where can we find you?
You can find me at www.team-bates.com, Team Bates on Twitter. You can go to whatahowler.com to check out their most recent issue. And you can find this podcast at thatsomls.com and thatsomls on iTunes.
Yeah, subscribe to the show. Give us a little rating there. Give us some stars. Get us to climb the rungs of the podcast echelons. Do that thing.
Absolutely. It's we thank you for sticking around in our preseason as we get excited, as we get pumped, as we go through our paces in advance of the new season.
Absolutely. I feel like we're almost match fit.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
But we know we both can go the full 90, that's for sure. Often in well into extra time.
Well, in the meantime, I will talk to you next week, and don't get sent off.
I will not get sent off in a preseason, no less. Nice.